Good afternoon, everyone. I will call to order the meeting of the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, January... I'm sorry, January 28th. February 4th. And we will be opening an informational hearing. I want to first, I think give notice would be the proper word, Patrick, that we have two members absent today. They are both excused, one on personal business. Well, they're both on personal business. And they will both be back, hopefully, on Monday for our meeting on Monday. But they're away on important things. And on that note, I am very happy to welcome to our dais an informational hearing that's going to be presented by staff from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Here to tell us about funding and about financing, and particularly those things that are going to involve transportation projects. So I would be happy to welcome you to the dais. Come, and we're delighted you took the time to come here today. I am sorry that Ms. Hack is not available, but she's a mom today, and that was very important that she go do something with her family. So we may have to do a bit of a refresher, or we may want to set up an appointment with her at some point.
Chairman McEwen, we'd be happy to come over and provide her. And,
I think it would be a courtesy if you wouldn't mind, and I'm sorry to take up your valuable time.
Not
but, gentlemen,
problem.
Welcome to our committee, and I'm just going to turn it over to you to talk to us about how we pay for things.
All right. Chair McEwen and Vice Chair Davis, for the record, Clyde Psyche, Deputy for Central Services for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And with me today is Lee Helgerson, who is the manager of our debt and investment program. So we're here today to present the committee with information on transportation funding, particularly here to talk to you today, provide you with information today, on our bond program. So the majority of our funding in the department comes from two primary sources. The federal government, where through our federal partners we receive funding for highways, transportation safety, public transit, and other programs. And then we're funded on the state side primarily through the gas tax, weight mile tax, and then fees that are assessed for vehicle licensing and registration. So historically, for the most part, the agency has been a pay-as-you-go agency. In other words, we get the funds and then we disperse them for projects. However, in 2001, the legislature created the Oregon Transportation Investment Act Program, or OTIA as it's more commonly known. And the department was also directed to fund the projects associated with that program through the sale of bonds. So that sort of changed the way we financed transportation projects in the state of Oregon at that point in time. Subsequent to that, the legislature approved two more phases of the OTIA program, OTIA 2 and 3. They also approved the Jobs and Transportation Act and then the Connect Oregon program. And all of these programs were also funded through the sale of bonds. So the use of bonding has been a valuable tool in helping us address some critical infrastructure needs. And we often liken bonding to the purchase of a house. You front load the investment and put the money up front, so you gain the asset or get the funding to make improvements to infrastructure. But then you incur the debt and pay that debt off over a number of years. So before I turn it over to Lee, there's just a couple of other things I'd like to share with the committee. So first of all, for the use of bonds, we've primarily used bonding to finance large capital improvement projects. We don't bond to support our maintenance programs. We aggressively manage the debt we incur. And Lee will address that a little bit in his presentation. But we constantly monitor the market to see if we have opportunities to refund or refinance some of our debt at a lower interest rate. Because of the diligence we apply to managing our bond program, right now the department has the highest credit rating of any state agency, and we also have a credit rating that's comparable, if not higher, than most of the Department of Transportation's across the nation. And finally, while bonding has allowed us to make the upfront investments to address some critical infrastructure needs, it also has created a situation where we've incurred the debt, and now we're in the process of starting to pay that investment back, which means that as we move forward, part of our funding will have to go to debt service payments to pay off those bonds. So with that, if there are no questions, I'll turn it over to Lee.
Thank you, Deputy Director.
Thank you, Clyde. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Davis. My subject really is bonding and the Department of Transportation's bonding programs, and not the overall funding of the department, but just specifically the bonding program. So as was previously discussed, the state of Oregon has a long-term commitment to transportation infrastructure investment. And specifically, as Clyde has mentioned, the OTIA program, the Jobs and Transportation Act, or JTA program, and also lottery bonded debt that has financed a variety of multimodal transportation projects throughout the state, including our Connect Oregon program, but also other local government sponsored projects. So it's important to understand that capital financing is a very important financing tool for capital projects. Obviously, we go to the markets for our bond and our financing for large capital investments. However, there is a debt repayment schedule that must be adhered to, and there's a real cost to that, and a cost in present terms, but also in future budgets that needs to be considered. So an over-reliance on debt can significantly and negatively impact the department as well as the state of Oregon. However, it also buys assets. It purchases and provides you with a bridge or a road well in advance of what you could do on a pay-go basis. Just like your home mortgage, most folks, at least most folks that I know, take out a mortgage and they finance their home over a period of 25, 30 years or whatever. So there's an investment there, and you make sure that the costs that you incur are some percentage, somewhere between 25% and 35% of what your income is. So just kind of general figures. So, but anyways, the legislature, the executive branch, as well as the Office of the State Treasurer really are in a partnership and work together to fund through bonding a variety of infrastructure projects throughout the state. We also try to ensure that we enhance and preserve our current outstanding credit rating, whether it be the Department of Transportation or the State of Oregon's general obligation rating, the lottery revenue bond rating, and the like. So this ensures that the state of Oregon has access to the capital markets through obviously the bond finance or the bond investment banks such as J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and the like, as well as retail investors throughout this state as well as other states. We had a handout for you. I'm not sure if you have it in front of you, but there's a flow diagram
Excuse me, just one second. For our members, it is on OLIS. I don't think we have a paper copy, but it is on OLIS.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. But anyways, on page, on the handout, on page 2, I took from the 2015 State Debt Policy Advisory Commission report a flow diagram showing the bonding process that we go through. So essentially, the governor, the executive department, proposes a budget and a bonding program for review and consideration by the legislature. The legislature is required to any bonds that are issued requires the legislative assembly's approval. No bonds are issued in the state of Oregon, at least by state agencies, without the legislative assembly's approval. It must be in either other statutes, but also in the annual biannual bonding bill. The state treasurer is the issuer of all state of Oregon bonds. So it's not the, although sometimes we interchangeably will say that the ODOT has issued or a Department of Administrative Services has issued, but technically it's the state treasurer's office. They are the instrument that actually issues the bonds They're responsible for essentially oversight of the state agency's bonding programs, as well as the marketing interaction with the state, with the credit rating agencies such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch, as well as the hiring of underwriting investment bankers, determining whether or not we want to use a competitive sale versus a negotiated sale, and the like. So they're instrumental, and we have a very good partnership with the State Treasurer's Office. Okay, so we really do rely on their specialized expertise offered by the State Treasurer, as well as our financing team. So,
could you touch on how you determine whether you're better off doing a competitive sale or a negotiated sale?
Part of it is whether or not there's a real story behind the bond. And in the case of a Department of Transportation, we have a very, very, probably the investment bankers will tell you, we have the most complex revenue program in probably in the country, just because of the way the flow of funds work. So we have a real story to tell. So it's really prudent, at least the treasurer, my analysis, as well as the treasurer's recommendation, that we hire a team, which also includes our financial advisor, bond counsel, the Department of Justice, and also a syndicate of investment bankers. So, but with other programs that are less complex than ours, sometimes, and it's really determined sometimes by individual preference, whether or not you want to use a competitive sale. A lot of the smaller sales, because they have the capacity, will go out as a competitive. Some of the Department of Energy sales and the like. You really have to ask the State Treasurer's Office for more amplification on that.
Welcome.
And I think I hear her.
Yeah. I'd like to come up and join the panel. You're very welcome to.
I think it's a Jeff.
Her presence was felt.
Yes.
Please continue.
Any other questions in that regard? No.
Any questions? No. Okay. Thank you.
Principally, ODOT participates in three types of long-term debt financing. And generically, that's the debt direct revenue bonded program. This is generally payable solely by a dedicated revenue stream. For the most part, in our case, it's the state highway fund. In the case of lottery, it would be the lottery revenue bond or lottery revenue proceeds resulting from lottery monies. These are special revenue obligations of the state, and they do not constitute a debt or general obligation of the state. So they're the only recourse to the repayment really is the revenue stream that is promised and pledged as towards the repayment of the loan. The other program, a large program, is the general obligation debt program. That does have a full faith and credit pledge of the state of Oregon. So we have not just a moral obligation, but really a dedicated obligation to repay those loans through whatever means necessary. So, and of that, we have two general types. One is the general fund supporter, which I'm sure all of you are very interested in, which requires the funding from the general fund. And the other is, I think the majority of them are self-supporting, self-supported revenue bonds, but general obligation bonds. So in the case of what I call facility bonds, as an example, the Article 11 Qs, if we issue, or through the Treasurer's Office and the Department of Administrative Services, bonds that are issued for facilities, in our case, the transportation building, the revenues to repay the debt is specifically from the State Highway Fund, but it also has the pledge of the general obligation pledge of the state. So very secure because of the pledge, but also it has a direct revenue source that does not really impact the general fund. Third category, and it's lesser importance nowadays because of the Article 11 QR, appropriation credits. And these are principally, for our purposes, certificates of participation, or COPs is a term that's often used. So these are similar to direct revenue bonds. They are a special limited obligation of the state. They do not constitute a general obligation pledge of the state of Oregon, and loan repayments are specifically from funds. And here's the difference, is that rather than the dedicated revenue stream of the highway fund, It requires a biannual appropriation of the Legislative Assembly. So slightly more risk. Article 11Q is much more beneficial to the state of Oregon. I thank you very much to Laura for having pushed that or recommended that that program. So it's been very beneficial to us.
Yeah, Mr. Representative Langley.
So thank you. I have a question. So direct revenue bonds versus that's backed up by general obligation. So is there a difference in cost to us? See, I'm assuming that one costs a little more because of the risk.
I think the Treasurer's Office would have to answer that. But in a case of the whether it's the State of Oregon's Department of Transportation bonds as opposed to a general obligation, they trade pretty much very closely. So our bonds and also facility bonds, general obligation bonds, would trade pretty close. But I think Laura can answer that better than I.
Thank you.
Through the chair, my name is Laura Lockwood McCall. I'm the director of the Debt Management Division in Oregon State Treasury. We just priced some refunding bonds for ODOT earlier this month, and just yesterday we priced some refunding bonds of GEO bonds for our university programs. And it, depending on where you are in the yield curve, it changes. But just in generic terms, I think ODOT spread to an index that we use was maybe 18 basis points or 0.18. We were at 12 for GEOs.
Really?
So ODOT's got a great credit rating. Mm-hmm. The state's got a great credit rating. But all things being equal, at least right now, the state has maybe a tiny, tiny improvement between the two. When we sold COPs, as Lee mentioned, we were probably more like 25, 30, 40 basis points from that index. So that's where we saved money. We were higher credit rating because it was a better pledge.
So I'm just trying to understand. So why wouldn't they all be general obligation bonds that, in this case, be the revenue from ODOT would be committed to versus the other?
Through the chair, that's a decision that the legislature gets to make. before I arrived on the scene about a decade ago, the revenue bond program was established for mm-hmm. the OTO 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. I think at the time probably they didn't want to. I can only speak, but we had GO bonds that were highway bonds many, many years ago that were retired. So I'm not quite sure why it was started. Perhaps they were worried about debt capacity and they wanted to separate it. I'd say, though, that those interest rates are so comparable that we're roughly good. But realize it's because ODOT runs a really tight ship, that they have such a good credit rating. Otherwise, the spread would be much greater.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
For which we are all eternally grateful.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Or at least
and I do promote their credit on a regular basis, so you should know. I always say nice things about ODOT. So.
Thank you very much.
Continue.
And a little bit to that point, the state is authorized through a constitution to issue general obligations, mm-hmm. state highway bond general obligations, and they can be used for roads and highways and the like. So we do have that authorization. They were last really used in 1992 mm-hmm. or
really?
So. So you'll see in a follow-on chart that's in our handout a small sliver that is mm. basically the remnant of that program. Okay. There are a lot of decisions as to why we would use a general obligation program versus a revenue bond program. They are both very good, and they can be used in tandem, utilizing the strengths of both programs. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bond programs managed by the Department of Transportation really include the OTIA program, the mm-hmm. Oregon Transportation Investment Act program, and that has three different legislative approvals, one in 2001, two, and then subsequently in three. They include the OTIA 1 and 2, which we kind of combine into one grouping, and it was a total of $500 million. Basically, it was for modernization and preservation of highways and roads throughout the state. The last bonds were issued in 2007, and there are 184 designated projects, all of which have been completed as of May 2010. All funds relating to the OTIA 1 and 2 program have been expended to the state, back in 2010, rather. The other program is a larger program, the OTIA 3, approved by the legislature in 2003, and it was for state and local bridges, but also modernization programs. Essentially, it's $1.9 billion in bonds were authorized, $1.3 billion for state and local bridges, and the remainder, $300 million for modernization programs. All bonds were issued in 2010. That bonding program, again, is complete. And of that, there were 271 total bridges that were considered to be needing repair and were financed with the OTIA 3 program, and 71 modernization program projects, rather. So essentially all of the OTIA 3 programs are projects are also complete. As an indication of how long the debt is for, the final bonds will be paid off in 2039. So,
what was that?
2038. I'm sorry, 2038. Yes. So.
Can I ask a question since I stopped?
Yes, Representative McLean.
The one question that I had about not the differences between the different types of bonds, but even though federal dollars have been drying up and continue to seem that we don't see a lot of federal dollars on the horizon or something for us to, you know, aspire to, is if we're trying to get matching funds, you know, between the state and the federal government, do they care about the kind of bond we have, or, you know, the matching funds can be anything we find to be good for us?
They don't care about what kind of bonds we issue. Yeah.
So,
thank you. Yes, Mr. Representative Langley.
So is there strategy to the length of time to repay the bonds other than just to stretch our cash? I mean, so why 20 years or 30 years or what's the?
Yes, there is. I mean, different programs have different structures, different maturities. In the case of the highway program, we have normally issued 25-year bonds as a whole. And the reason for that is the projects that we're financing are very long-lived. I mean, we're talking about 50-year bridges, 100-year bridges, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. So we can legally go out even further, for the most part.
And not always the best strategy, but your point is taken.
Yes. I understand that. But thank you. I wondered if it was a relationship to the asset. Yeah.
The next program that we manage is the Jobs and Transportation Act. This was passed in 2009, and among other things, it authorized $840 million in highway user tax revenue bonds for the program. There were 51 specific projects authorized, 37 of which were highway projects, and 14 were designated individually selected by local communities in eastern Oregon. The $450 million in JTA bonds were issued in 2013. One of the things that we do at the department is that we only issue bonds when the department's cash flow needs require them. Originally expected to have been issued in 2009, 2010, we in fact were able to delay the sale until 2013. We don't want to issue early. We generally ensure that there's a lot of we expend monies on the project and then do it on a reimbursable basis. This is IRS regulations, much too difficult to go into, but there's a reason why we want to really issue bonds only when we need them, so we don't violate any of the IRS.
Does that indicate that those projects, where are those projects in the time frame of when those bonds are awarded? They're not connected. The projects are done, and now the
some are done and some are not done. I mean, some are
they're still in the works.
As one of the one JTA project is Newburgh Dundee, mm-hmm. and that's currently being financed by a combination of JTA funding through bonds and other monies, but also through a small loan offered at matching funds for the various communities of Newburgh, Dundee, the county, and the city of McMinnville. And that constituted was $16 million for their matching funds for the JTA. So in this case, again, it's a partnership between the state and also the local communities. So.
But, you mentioned over east. Are there projects over there that are still yet to be completed?
I would have to get.
Yeah. Representative Bence might know. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. thank you, Madam Chair, for that opportunity.
I knew you were.
I think the projects on the eastern part of the state are complete. The interesting question to me would be the cost of the money.
Mm-hmm.
What did the money end up costing us?
Recently, do you have? Through the chair, the most recent transaction we did was a refunding. We didn't extend the term of the bonds. So I want to say it's an average. Like, wouldn't you say we were around a little over 3%?
It was just over 3%.
Yeah. Like, and the GO bond that we refunded yesterday, again, we didn't extend the term, was in the neighborhood of 2.2 2.4% all-in cost of funds. Not everything we've ever done for ODOT was at that rate. Do you know what your current blended comparative cost of funds?
Because all the bonds have been issued with various maturities. We've done refunding, so it's around in the high 3.8 or 3.9% overall. But that blends in not just our fixed rate bonds, but also our variable rate bonds, which have done very, very well. And when you would do all of that analysis, back in 2003, they were issued at a higher rate. We've since refunded some of those. But we can calculate the blended rate if you desire.
I can tell you when I came on board and we started working on the variable fixed rate mix, we would have been happy with a blended cost of funds of 5.5%. And so we've been surprised that we've been able to bring that blended cost of funds down as low as we have thus far.
Hold on, Manager. The second question is to go back just a little bit and to ask about the total amount of bonding capacity that the department enjoys and what the limitations are on that. I know the state has rules about how many times how much our income must exceed that debt service and so forth. What's the rule in the department?
Coverage. Right? We have coverage requirements. Coverage requirements are embedded within the bond documents. We have two different categories of bonds that we issue for the Highway User Tax Revenue Bond Program, which is kind of separate from the rest of the facility bonds, the general obligation bonds, and lottery bonds. But that coverage is 3 times coverage for the senior lien and 2 times coverage for the subordinate lien, which really is the Build America bonds that we issued in 2010, as well as the variable rate component. Right now, we have around almost 5 times coverage for the senior lien, and about 3.2 times coverage for the subordinate lien. So we always strive for at a minimum of 3 times aggregate overall debt service coverage of the program. So right now, as the rating agencies will attest, with our high credit rating, our coverage is very, very strong. It's approved at a prudent level at this point for the current revenue stream that we have. So,
follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
So the when you say coverage, the revenue stream is what for those bonds?
Well, currently, the revenue stream estimated in as of 6/30/2014 is $579 million.
And the source?
And the source is the highway fund. So
the gas tax.
The gas tax. Gas tax, DMV fees, and the weight mile, and the like. So, and from that, it's a very complex flow of funds that goes through. So we start off with the 579. You have various add-backs and subtractions, and then when you get down to it, right now, as of this date, we have about approximately 4.8 times coverage for the senior liens, 3.8 for the subordinate lien. And again, this kind of goes out over time and projections. And when we do our projections, we also include whatever has been authorized already. So included in the projections is the entire Jobs and Transportation Act bonds.
If I could add through the chair, we do not pledge federal funds. It's a decision we've made to keep that outside of the equation. And obviously, the rating agencies aren't just looking at debt service. They're making sure that you have enough revenue to pay for operations. So, you know, we wouldn't want to go 100%. And so that would be silly because we wouldn't have money to keep things up and running. And so that's part of it. You know, you don't collect taxes if there's no one unable to use your roads. So those are, as Lee said, those are prudent levels. We could go lower with coverage. We would have a lower credit rating and pay a higher cost of funds.
And to add to that point, the coverage, an investor wants to make sure that you have sufficient cushion so that because revenues change over time. They go up and they go down slightly. So they want to make sure that if you end up with a downturn in your revenues, that you have sufficient coverage to react to that, especially given the fact that additional revenues require legislative assembly approval, and that takes time. So the coverage levels are designed to ensure the cushion. And it's also designed, because they're also, as well as we are, interested to make sure that we have enough monies for operations, maintenance, and the like. So we also have that. And that's one of the reasons for the coverage. So it's, you'll see that in the diagram that will be further on in the handout that, you know, obviously the debt load has increased dramatically from the PAYGO back in 2000. Same.
Yes, one more question.
Certainly.
So let's assume for a moment that the cost of the money was 3%, just for sake of discussion.
For now.
For the moment. and so someone buys that bond. Those are tax-exempt bonds. Is that correct?
Most of them are. We have actually issued some refunding bonds at taxable rates. And the reason for that was because, believe it or not, the taxable rates were lower than the rates that we initially originally issued the bond. So,
but I would say in general, new money, when we're doing new money for new projects, the projects we're doing are all done on a tax-exempt basis.
As long as there's no private use. That's correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is really much more of a revenue committee, but since a bunch of us are on the revenue committee, the cost then to the state is some of that tax-exempt financing, if you will. Although we'd have to kind of wander through that. It's of interest to me because I'm serving on the Public Infrastructure Commission, and we're trying to look at how we can utilize other techniques. And I think some of you have been involved in those discussions. And so this cost of money piece is very, very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I'll be following up with, I think, maybe all three of you on these issues.
Sure. Interest rates right now in the tax-exempt market have been only this low for less than 1% of the time in the last 30 years. So using that low number, as great as it is, we're in very weird, special times. And we've been saying that for several years, but we're in weird, special times. We've already refinanced bonds, as I said, in January and today, over $91 million in interest rate savings. And I've been refunding bonds for years. And so these are bigger numbers than we've seen in a long time. There's no guarantee that will stay, but there is a... Right now, we're not doing anything taxable. Right now, tax-exempt rates are just amazingly low.
Yeah, I mean, as an example, the tax-exempt rate for a AA-rated credit, as of today, is about, for a 25-year bond, is about 2.82%. So it's very, very, very low. I mean, that's historical. I mean, we're still at very... It's gone up a little bit, but it's at remarkable rates still.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for an incredibly interesting presentation. And could you talk a little more about the debt restructuring you've been doing? You mentioned $91 million of refunding some bonds.
Lots of different credits.
Yeah, through lots of different credits. But what goes into paying down one bond and reissuing another? Just be interested in the process.
I feel like I'm absconding with ODOT's hearing. I will be speaking next Tuesday at the House Revenue Committee. We can take it up that through the chair. We really have simply look at bonds that are still callable. You only get one shot at doing advance refunding if you sell bonds under the federal tax laws. So we have to look at which series of bonds haven't been refunded. Mm. And we have basic thresholds. We don't just refund a refund, but if we can achieve present value savings of a certain threshold, I think 5% will take out a particular maturity. If it drops below that, we also look at the escrow that will be in there and making sure it's relatively efficient. And if there's a high degree of efficiency, then we hold off and wait, because we'll eventually refund, touch, issue new bonds, and we can refund. The ones we've refunded, we did about 400 plus million of ODOT bonds. And you know, we were looking at refunding in December, and we thought we might make $10 million in present value savings. And so it was like it would go away if interest rates moved 10 basis points. So we said, let's not do it. And we were very disciplined. And then in January, interest rates kept dropping, and we made $31 million on gross savings and about 26 in present value savings. Mm. So we were kind of shocked. We also had a lottery revenue. We didn't restructure lottery bonds. We just refunded and popped up another 25, 30 million, you know, on present value and higher on gross. And as I said, we just did GO bonds for universities. We have a large Q bond refunding of some old COPs. As Lee was mentioning, the reason there aren't any is we're refunding all of them any chance we can get, and the amount that we have collectively of COPs has dropped from about $1 billion. And it was $400 million, and it's going to drop even further once we complete that. Yeah. So that's our job. It's like you're refinancing your mortgage. We're just refinancing all the state's mortgages, if you will, not extending any particular maturities or needing to. It's kind of a remarkable time for some of us, a little busy, to say the least.
Representative Pence.
So the obvious question is, who gets the money?
That's right.
I was just hoping for 1%.
other than your 1%, who gets the money?
I, through the chair, what you'll see is that there'll be modifications to the debt service schedules for the 15-17 budget that you're working on that will affect lottery, whatever you're ready funding, general fund for higher ed, for ODOT. So the people who get the savings is the budget that was paying the debt service in the first place.
But to add to that, I mean, when you...
It's over time, yeah. Please realize.
With the most recent refunding that we did, I mean, we refunded $408 million worth of bonds. The nominal overtime debt service was approximately $44 million in debt service savings. The present value savings was around $33 million because of the cost, time cost of money. But when you look at the stream, the average was approximately $3.5 million in savings, nominal dollars in savings on a yearly basis. But however, in the near term, the savings is greater the longer out you go. Mm-hmm. So the near term was approximately $900,000 to $1 million over the next course of the next couple of fiscal years.
We're not trying to take the upfront savings or there's ways to do that, but we're trying to really just spread it very fiscally conservatively across time.
So. Well, to clarify, what you're saying is there's not a big pot of money out there that we all can put our eyes on now and go try and tap into to go build things.
Very nice.
Thank you. I think we need to make that very clear.
Madam Chair, if I may, with your indulgence, I would very much like I don't know how you're going to do this, but if I don't ask you, I will forget and then not have the opportunity to utilize this portion of the discussion in our Public Infrastructure Commission meetings, because under the P3 concept, the benefit that you just talked about would not have accrued to the state.
Understood.
Exactly. And that's why I need that as one of the elements to make sure we take into account as we discuss P3s. I just need to have an email or something from you. You can mention your 1% in the email also.
We do press releases in the treasurer's office, so I'll be sure to get you those.
Thank you.
Yeah. Shall we all be on your list? Any other questions?
Okay. I've completed the OTIA program and the Jobs and Transportation Act program. The other next largest program that we have are lottery revenue-supported bond programs. And really, there's two categories there that ODOT either sponsors or administers. And again, all lottery bonds are issued through the State Treasurer's Office. DAS, Department of Administrative Services, is the program manager for them. So they are the actual, in combination, Treasurer and Department of Administrative Services are the issuer of the bonds. And they do it at the behest or the request of the resident, the responsible agency who is responsible for the expenditure of the bond proceeds, but also for the debt service repayments. Debt service repayments are paid from lottery proceeds, and there's a funneling of money from DAS, from lottery to DAS, and then on to us, so we budget the cost of that. But the two programs are pretty large. We have currently either outstanding or issued $660 million in lottery bonds through the Department of Transportation's programs, and also an additional $55 million was issued this past January. In the most recent bond sale by DAS. So that's quite a bit of debt that we held. About half of that is the Connect Oregon program, and that was established, or the first issuance was in 2005, and the last was obviously in 2015. There are five programs that have been authorized, and we normally refer to them as Connect 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. The funding is restricted to non-highway purposes, so we can't use the revenues and the bond proceeds for anything other than multimodal transportation projects. Lottery revenue bonds, as I said, are issued by DAS through the State Treasurer's Office and at our request. The entire $382 million in Connect Oregon monies have been issued to date as of the 29th of January. Currently, all of the Connect Oregon lottery bonds will be paid off in 2035. The other program, which essentially ODOT acts as kind of a pass-through administer of the bond proceeds for local government multimodal transportation investments, and that's around $330 million over the course of the bond program. So, and those go for the largest of which went $250 million for TriMet's Portland-Milwaukee Extension Commuter Rail. Additionally, there was around $35 million for South Metro's and the South Metro Commuter Rail, as well as a number of other smaller issuances for industrial rail, short line, the Porter Coos Bay Rail Link, as well as the Salem-Keizer Transit District Center. So, big program. ODOT consumes, or not consumes, but manages approximately 40% of the currently outstanding lottery revenue bonds.
So, this is probably pretty simple, straightforward, but I don't get it. So, ODOT administers the debt service payment for other lottery bond programs on behalf of various governments. So, I'm trying to understand, so where are the funds coming from that repay those,
The lottery.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But they're local projects.
They're local projects.
Okay, which means the
In fact, all of the lottery-backed programs that ODOT administers are the local projects,
that's what
whether it's through the Connect Oregon program proper or through other separately legislatively approved projects, such as the Salem-Keizer Transit District or Transit Center.
Okay.
Through the chair, we use lottery bonds. The state legislature has used lottery bonds to fund every kind of thing you can think of, from school computer equipment, parks and rec, local projects, state projects. It's our most flexible source of funding.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
thank you. Questions? Okay.
Okay. And the last category, I refer to them as facility bonds. And essentially, they're for facilities, whether it be for renovation of the transportation building, which was completed in 2012. State radio project is another example. The DMV headquarters is a third example that we have bonds outstanding for. These are either certificates of participation, which are appropriation credits, or they're Article 11Q general obligation bonds issued, again, through both are issued through DAS and the State Treasurer's Office. Currently, we issued $64 million for the transportation building, and currently there's outstanding $169 million for the state radio project. Okay. I think if you go to the chart on page 5 of your handout, you'll see what our overall debt service looks like. It's the debt service is the principal and interest, and not the bond proceeds resulting, but the principal and interest payments. And you'll see on the diagram we have basically. These don't include lottery revenue bonds because ODOT, they are not state highway fund supported. And what this diagram shows is our issued and our outstanding debt service. So that not only includes the bonds that are outstanding currently as of today, but it also includes the forecasted bonds that we will issue in FY16, FY17 for both the state radio project and also for the final tranche of the JTA bonds. And that final tranche will be $390 million. So you can see back in 2000, we had a nominal amount of bonds. Most of that was in fact, general obligation state highway bonds. Mm-hmm. Followed that by the OTIA program, which we previously discussed. That is our largest program to date. With that, the JTA program. And again, the one in green is the JTA, and it includes the future issued bonds as well. And then layered onto that is the facility bonds, which include ODOT's share of the state radio project, as well as the transportation building and DMV headquarters. So
the out at 2025 or so, it shows the OTIA that, if I'm reading this correctly, the call on for repayment, the amount it's going to cost to repay goes up. So. It's kind of, if you look at OTIA, it's underneath the $150 million line, but in 2025 or 2030, it jumps up. Doesn't mean we've issued more bonds.
The bonds were, it's a little complex because the bonds were, we have a significant component of the bonds are in variable rate.
Okay.
And what has been done
was we put out the long-term debt out far.
Sure.
Because, I mean, currently we're paying 0.35% interest on $265 million worth of bonds. So it was prudent in the analysis to issue the bonds and put them out long, basically. Put the final maturities out very long because the interest payments were so small in comparison to whether or not you would do a fixed rate bond, which would have been somewhere in the 3 to 4% category. Because the variable rate bonds are also, they're considered to be weekly, we can call them at any time and fix them out. So through the analysis with the state treasurer's office as well as our financial advisor and the investment bankers, we may choose at some point in time to issue that. However, that said, the rating agencies will tell you that a prudent level of variable rate debt is around somewhere between 15 and 20%. We currently have approximately 11.5% to 12% in
we have
variable
a follow-up
rate debt.
Representative Langley.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Fascinating.
Thank you. It is an interesting chart.
Yes.
The wall of debt. We don't want to call it
the wall of debt, yes.
Yeah. Other people call it a pile.
We have saved our bridges.
Anyway,
please continue.
That really does conclude the description of our bonding posture, our bonding programs. Just to leave you with it consists of the department's bond program consists of the highway user tax revenue bonds. It consists of the general obligation bonds, Article 11 Qs, other facility bonds, the COPs or certificates of participation, which are the appropriation credits, as well as lottery revenue bonds. Currently, our rating for the state highway user tax revenue bond program is rated AAA by S&P, AA1 by Moody's, and AA+ by Fitch, which is just a notch higher than the lottery bonds, which also have a AAA from S&P, but a AA2. And the state's overall ratings are AA+, AA1, and AA+ from S&P. So very, very good outstanding ratings, and it shows the prudent debt management of the state of Oregon and the Department of Transportation. So with that, if there are any other additional questions.
Any questions for this panel?
Just a quick question.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you all again very much. This is a question for Laura. Apologies. And probably more appropriate for revenue next week, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyway. I believe the Debt Advisory Commission's recommendation is that no more than 5% of
general fund income
go into debt service. How close are we to that line?
Through the chair, I will be sharing that information with you Tuesday. But we project at this point, if we sell the bonds that were authorized by the 13-14 legislature, we'll be at 3.5% of revenues. Revenues have been going up, and so we are in really nice shape, which means we'll have general fund capacity. Lottery, not so much.
Thank you.
Well, on behalf
and
of
through the chair, we are distributing to all members, whether you're on house revenue or not. This report that's going out, so everyone should probably see it electronically or maybe in a hard copy in their inbox in the very near future.
Thank you. And on behalf of, I think, the members of this committee and the members of the legislature, we thank you for your good stewardship.
We thank you so much because we couldn't do as good a job if the legislature didn't do great stewardship, truthfully. It's the fiscal decisions and the methodologies employed by our legislature have really helped tell that story over the last decade.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And next on our agenda, I'd like to invite up Mr. Schessler, who's the Assistant Director of the Oregon Business Development Department. Mr. Schessler, in the second part of our informational hearing, will be talking to us about funding and financing infrastructure projects. So thank you for joining us, Mr. Schessler.
Thank you for the invitation.
Mm-hmm. Things that are all near and dear to all of our hearts here.
Yes. For the record, my name is Lynn Schessler. I'm the director of the Infrastructure Finance Division of the Business Development Department here. First, I really appreciate the rather in-depth explanation of bonding that ODOT provided, because I don't think I have that knowledge. Actually, we have the benefit of the scenario that was described where DAS and the Treasurer's Office coordinate, and I get to be the lucky beneficiary of those bond sales and get to spend the money rather than worrying about how we got it. So it's been very useful. I would also add that Laura Lockwood McCall, who just left, I invited her to the table because she is an Infrastructure Finance Authority board member, but she had to leave for a different appointment. For those of you who are unfamiliar, the Infrastructure Finance Authority is essentially a creation of the legislature, and it's housed within the Business Development Department. It's within the Infrastructure Finance Division, and I make that distinction because at one point in time, the Infrastructure Finance Authority was the division, but through the course of actions of the 2004 legislature, seismic rehabilitation bonds were added to the portfolio of the IFA, so now it's a bit broader than just what was originally described as the responsibility of the IFA. So to that extent, we have three bond types in the department. We have general obligation bonds, as was described. Those provide the seismic rehabilitation grants, and I emphasize grants, so that to the eligible school districts and emergency service providers. So the scenario is that the bonds are issued and the debt service, or the bond payments, if you will, are paid by general funds. We receive the proceeds. We go through a competition to select the projects, but we provide grants to the eligible entities. We just concluded the selection of $28 million worth of seismic rehabilitation grants. Funding will go to 13 schools and 22 essential service facilities. Those bonds are scheduled to be, the proceeds are scheduled to be available in March, and I was hoping Laura would stick around, but I sort of got the indication that general obligations bonds are selling very well. And so if we get a 2 or 2.3% interest rate on those bonds, that'll be very, very good for enhancing the program, hopefully beyond its current rather modest $30 million per biennium. The second type of funding are the lottery-backed bonds that were described. Those essentially provide funding for the Special Public Works Program in our department. Again, I appreciate the legislature's generosity because the lottery bonds are issued. The proceeds come to the department, but the lottery pays the debt service. So if we issue those funds to local communities, the communities pay us back those loans, but the loans go into a revolving loan pool so that we can recycle them over and over and over again. So you're progressively creating a much larger pool of funds than if we were just issuing bonds and then they were paid back and not being able to be recycled. So it's a very beneficial and insightful program for the state.
So are all of those all of those loans versus some grants for the Special Public Works?
Chair McEwen and Representative Lively, I oversimplified, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
In the broader picture, the bond or the loan payments come back, go into a revolving loan fund. The interest earnings on those loans go to support the operations of the department, provide match funds for some of the federal programs we have, and to the degree we can, we also issue grants or to help the affordability, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, for communities that, you know, basically are in a hardship situation.
Thank you.
So what we do in order to price those loans then to the community, we basically work off a basically public finance index. Today, our interest rate is 3.4% to a community. That works out well for us. I would also point out that the loans we make to communities have no loan fee. There's no prepayment penalty. And so I think we're providing as good a deal as possible for communities. We also have a status called the disadvantaged community. And what that means, it's a community with a low median income as determined by HUD. and or it has high user rates as a result of their system operations. So as a result, a community close to Representative Live of the area, Shangri-La, as euphoric as that community might sound, its water system is not.
No.
And so we have just financed a project for them. It's a $2 million project. Nearly $1.2 million of that project was a grant, the balance being a loan. In spite of that grant, their monthly user rates, yeah, because it's a small community, 92 users, their monthly water bill is $120 a month.
Yeah.
Representative Bentz also identified, you know, are these taxable or non-taxable bonds when he questioned ODOT. Mm-hmm. We shoot and strive for taxable bonds because one of our missions and endeavors is to help communities finance infrastructure to their industrial sites or support their industrial development. If there's a private beneficiary as the end result, then we want to make sure we use taxable bonds so we don't get ourselves in trouble. An example is that, for instance, Port of Morrill had the potential of a ConAgra's $300 million expansion, but they did seek that the Port of Morrill provide a pretreatment plant for the effluent coming out of their plant before it got put into the port's wastewater system. So we financed that $5 million plant for the Port of Morrill using taxable bonds so that, that indeed the business could use it. So that's out there. Occasionally we do revenue bonds, as was described. It's a means that we can stretch the special public works lottery-backed bonds that you've provided. If we have a community that has a relatively high credit rating, we can do revenue bonds. We just pass the proceeds through at the same interest rate we incur. We don't put any spread on it. Again, we don't have any loan fees. We do ask the community to pay us one half the cost of issuance. That's the only cost that we recover. And in that way, as I said, we get to spread our special public works or the lottery-backed bonds farther. But we do provide, even in that scenario, 100% financing. Typically with a revenue bond, when you issue them, they would want to see that there's 20% commitment and contribution by the community. We use the revenue bonds to pay for 80% of the loan. We use the special public works funds from the lottery-backed bonds to finance the other 20%, and the credit rating and credit agencies appreciate that approach and accept it as being the community's contribution. So that pretty much describes the programs that we have. Of course, we have federal funds in addition. Those are the community development block grant. That's a grant to the department. We also have safe drinking water, which is a grant to the department by way of the health authority from the Environmental Protection Agency. We receive that as a grant, but we do and are obligated by the federal terms of it to create a revolving loan pool as well with those funds, so that over the course of biennium after biennium becomes a relatively sizable pool of funds, which is great, mm-hmm, because we can address then those mandated water system repairs that come from other regulatory agencies. And with that, if you have any other questions.
No, Mr. Schessler, I'd be curious, you know, that you are in the Oregon business development arena, but a lot of the work you do has to do with municipalities and wastewater and things of that bent. But could you characterize for us how the work that you do in those arenas impacts economic development? Because there is a connection here. It's not necessarily obvious because it sounds like a lot of this has to do with things that might not have an impact on economic development.
Chair McEwen and the committee members, there's a very clear connection, absolutely. If a business comes to town and wants to place itself, but the city's water capacity, water quality, or the wastewater system capacity is not adequate to serve that business, then that business is going to move on. So that's part of our mission, to not only address the city's capacity and quality needs, regulated or in addition to, but then also to support the community, as I mentioned, if they have industrial lands, getting the utilities to that site so that it's basically shovel ready when that business comes to town. So that's the role we play in this economic development strategy.
Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one of the things that's been not obvious to me in these borrowings of the state, both at the ODOT level and at this level, has been the return on the investment. Because, of course, what we're interested in is getting the money back that we loaned. And I'm not sure I don't know where the measure of the value of, let's say, of a road or a bridge or, in Morrow County's case, the pretreatment plant. Where is that? You just mentioned, of course, there's a value to the community of keeping a business in it, but where's the measure of that value? In other words, does the department put together something like that we can see?
As part of members of the committee, as part of our measure, it depends on the program, but Special Public Works, for instance, and the project in Boardman. We look at that project, and in fact, when a business is coming to town and expanding, such as ConAgra's proposal, we look at the project expense, but we also forgive $5,000 per job created. So in the case of that financing, it was a $5 million project. They created or promised to create 100 jobs. They've actually created far more than that. But we forgave $500,000 of that loan based upon a calculation that even over the short course, that job's value in that community is at least as $5,000. And over the duration of that 30-year existence of that plant, the state gets its money back many times over.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
I think we're missing, I know we're missing something that we're going to need in these conversations, that if there's a transportation package that we bring, a big if, but if there is one, being able to go out into our communities and show the value of the borrowings that we just looked at is essential. And that we went through this in great detail, as I'm sure most recall that were involved in it, on the CRC, which in an attempt to figure out if that improvement was constructed, what the return on that investment would be. It didn't get built, so we'll never know. The question then for us that go back to Coos Bay or to Ontario or to Wilsonville or wherever we go back to is how we can show that an investment today is going to return X amount tomorrow. We need those facts. And what happens, of course, there was a device built in, $5,000 per job. But that doesn't tell anything close to the entire story. You kind of went on into the balance of the story, which is far more jobs than that were created, and this is going to go on for a long time. But where's the measure? And I already raised this issue with ODOT, and I'm hoping we're going to hear something from them, but mm-hmm. We'd sure like to see it from you.
Chair and members of the committee, some of our programs have a rather elementary calculation, but it's related to the job created, what's the salary, what's the expected state income tax realized by that individual or from that individual in that new job creation, and then the measure can be 2 years or 5 years. Does that individual's income tax equate to the investment that we made?
And follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
So of course, I understand that. And I've been through that conversation a number of times, and I appreciate the value of it. But what I am seeking is as clear as we can get explanation in whether the currency is jobs or the currency is income tax, whatever it is, perhaps a number of different measures. We just went through this on the little mine that is outside of Vail, Oregon, about 70 miles, that creates about 111 jobs. Right. And we went through, we had about seven measures of its value as we look at that road that leads out to it. And it's easy because it's been there for 15 years, so we can instantly measure what would happen if it left. But what I'm looking for is something that we can show that but for these investments, these other events would not have occurred. And it's extremely important because people are going to say the JTA cost X and will still cost for another 30 years X amount. What's the other side of that story?
Right. And Chair Representative Bentz, unfortunately, from my own personal perspective, oftentimes the value is almost intangible, but you know it has an intrinsic value, and how do you measure that? So we get back to the pragmatic, well, we know how much income tax is being generated by that individual, and that's the best we can do, or we can use the economic model in plan, and then you get direct jobs, indirect jobs, and, you know, that is a art, I believe, more than a science in itself.
If I may, forgive me, Madam Chair, but if I may, there's a value that I use in many of my conversations, and it's this. Do you own a home in this community of Burns, Baker City? Yes, I do. Well, would you like to retain its value? Well, that'd be good. Would you want to have a market for it someday when you want to retire and sell it? Yeah, that'd be great. Well, we just happen to bring a business in here, and there will be a market for your home. What's the value of that? So those are the kind of numbers I wish we would be working on.
Well, and listening to that discussion, I mean, the value of it is, you know, I think even triple that in the fact that the tool could be used both for communication and education, because one of the things we're trying to do is explain, you know, basically to folks where their dollars are going and also what their dollars bring back to the communities. And anything we use or anything we invest, you know, has a basis of taxable dollars that we've brought in. And so I really do understand the fact that each one of your projects are very different. And I do agree with you that to be able to put a number on something sometimes is very difficult. But even if there was just a simple, you know, one-page vehicle that could be used by any representative or senator to take back to their community for a coffee or a town hall that explained this is how we know that we're getting, you know, really good returns on our money is always a good, you know, communication and educational tool. And I actually think you have more of that than you think you do or that you're thinking about today, because I feel like I've seen that through things like your economic model. And who is the state economist right now? Who is that?
Mark McMullen.
Mark. Okay. I still feel like I've seen through things that I've seen from that office that there are things there that we can talk about as far as what we're getting out of the investments that the state of Oregon is making, you know, in different things, including transportation projects. So I really do think I agree with the representative that this is an important issue, and it's important because it helps us explain that story to folks that really care about what their government's doing and what the projects are and what they're returning to the community. So I hope we can talk more about that in different ways.
And I'm certain this is a conversation that will begin now and continue on through this session, because right. Telling that story is going to be critically important as we move toward the end of the session and want to bring some sort of a package that's going to enhance transportation across the state. So we'll be looking to you to try and find ways that story can be told about the investments that we have made in the past and the investments we want to make in the future and how we quantify the value.
Right.
Yeah, Representative Lively.
So I would just like to add, and we've talked about this a lot, and I've done a lot of these discussions in my community since I spent my life working in economic development trying to justify why we do it. One of the key things we have to appreciate from the public's perspective is there are out there that say, why would the public make the investment? I believe what Lynn has talked about in that from a standpoint, we can show the return on income taxes, we can do all those things, but it goes back before you do the project. There's not agreement necessarily. It's kind of the but-for that Senator Benton was talking, or Representative Bentz was talking about. They don't agree that there is the but-for, that but-for the project would be there. And so that's what makes this so difficult mm-hmm. to communicate it, because I can tell you many of the discussions we had was around that, mm-hmm. about really was that the but-for, is that the reason mm-hmm. that the investment was made in that? And a lot of people are never going to agree that any government assistance or program has anything to do with that. So that's why it gets complicated, frankly.
Any further questions for Mr. Schessler?
Really?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for
your
time. I appreciate it very much. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I have been appointed to sit on the Infrastructure Finance Authority, so I am a member of his esteemed
Yay.
Group and appreciate the work that you and your staff do. Look forward to our next meeting.
Just can't vote.
No. I'm just there.
I can't vote.
On that note, I'm going to turn to Mr. Brennan and have him tee up what our agenda looks like for Monday. We will not be having a meeting on Friday, so we can head home a little early while the agenda is light. It won't last, so enjoy it for a brief time. Mm-hmm. But for this week, we will not be having a meeting on Friday. So on that note, Mr. Brennan, what's on the agenda for Monday?
Thank you, Madam Chair. With a business organ in the room, that's very handy for the first bill we will have up is the one business Oregon pre-session file bill that we have before us permits Oregon Business Development Department enter into agreements for loans, grants, or other assistance, including but not limited to direct purchase of goods or services relating to entrepreneurial and industry development. We have that bill up in front of us on Monday for public hearing. Also, we will have an ODOT DMV bill with that makes several small changes dealing with driver licenses, Madam Chair.
We will look forward to those hearings. Anything for the good of the order this afternoon? On that note, we are adjourned early. On that note, we are adjourned.